Well, as I say, we are in Ireland, one of Ireland's largest counties in the northwest, a very beautiful part of the country. Here to talk politics with some of those addressing the annual McGill Summer School and also to get a feel for life across this expansive county of Donegal. But first of all, sitting across from me now is a woman who held one of the most powerful positions in Irish politics not so very long ago. She's driven from down the road in Frosses, about half an hour away, and has come here to Glenties to talk about her life in the past 3.5 years. Mary Coughlan, a very good morning to you and thank you for coming on the programme.
Well, thank you for being here.
And it has been quite a period for you of massive adjustment in political life and also in your personal life. Talk to me first of all about the passing of your husband, David.
Well, it's been very tough, and David wasn't sick that long, really. He was diagnosed on a Holy Thursday, which was in April, and he passed away on the first day of September. So we missed a great game the next day, where Mayo were winning. They win a lot and they don't win the ultimate, but anyway. So that was very tough. He was very much part of my life, and I suppose he was the backbone of my career, because like anybody, men or women, if you don't have someone at home, if you have children, then it's very difficult to be in politics. But look at, he passed away on his, he was just 49, and that meant that life changed a lot for me. I thought there was a big change when I lost my seat, but the ultimate change was when he passed away.
You were about 18 months out of office and out of
the
doll at that
stage. I was, and it was just about tolerable to live with. Lost the seat. Look, we knew at the time it was going to be very tough. I made the decision I was going forward. Some people would have thought I should have not gone forward because I'd given as much as I had to politics, but I thought otherwise with my organisers and in the constituency. We lost out. We knew it was going to be tough. We ran two in a very tough election, and unfortunately I lost out in my own area, really. And an independent was elected. So not only did I lose out, but I had a lot of staff, as you know, in my office who all lost their jobs. But luckily, they're all gainfully employed again, which I'm delighted with. And we closed up the office, and I did a few things over the summer that I didn't get a chance to do when I was in politics. And after that, then, I was asked by a brother of mine to help him set up a company in the UK, and I was doing a bit of work with him. Which I enjoyed and meant that, you know, I had something else to keep me going. And then I had to give that up then when David became unwell.
And you and he, of course, I think met, and this is well known, when he was, you were passing through the gates of Leinster House and he was a Garda on duty on security.
Yeah, well, I just met the commissioner going out the door. So just to reassure her anyway, he was working.
And yeah, and I think he was subsequently, he managed to get a transfer up to very close to us here.
Just here in Glenties, actually. Glenties. He was here for a long time.
And you've got two children, they're well into their teens at this stage.
They are. I have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. And I hope you're not going to be too insulted, but they're both in bed sleeping, so they're not going to be listening to you, Sean.
That's perfect.
Like every other teenager in Ireland,
well,
I would say.
One of mine bought a paper, there was a piece about me in it last week, and he didn't bother reading it. No. So we're used to these little slights, intended or otherwise. But your son, Cathal, called after your late father, of course, who was one of the most wonderful gentlemen, I think, ever to grace the corridors of Leinster House. And he died very quickly from cancer.
Yeah.
And that
same as David, yeah. My dad was only 3 years, from 83 to 86, as a TD. I suppose he was a reluctant TD in many ways. He liked to be behind the scenes. And as you know, Clement was before that. So the two boys only got between them 6 years of political representation at the all level. And then in 86, I was just doing my finals in UCD. And just after that, I was asked by the party here and by the party leader, the great Charles Haughey at the time, would I consider going into politics? So I went on into the council in 1986, and 87 I was elected.
And it was a career that really took off, I suppose, when Fianna Fáil came back to power. Bertie Ahern, I think, gave you your first ministry, Social Welfare Protection, as it's now called, I think. And then you became Minister for Agriculture. And Taoiseach that when Brian Cowan became Taoiseach. Now, you, like a lot of people, got far more than you bargained for in that period. Looking back now, what are your biggest regrets about that period from 2008?
I think there was a couple of... It was a very tough time. And I would have been in cabinet from 2002. And, you know, the tsunami that hit us was not on the radar at the time. Because if it was, we'd have been far more prepared. So it, you know, and we were in a coalition which was also something new for Fianna Fáil. You know, so we had a lot of work to do because the Greens had an agenda that they wanted to perform with, and naturally, just like any coalition, and we had ours. And, you know, there was a few things that, you know, were averse now to some of the Fianna Fáil people, particularly the rural people. So you had that to deal with. I suppose when Brian went in, he didn't have a clean sweep. Was unanimously elected, but then no one else went forward at the time.
Well, and Bertie had kind of laid hands on him. In fact, yeah, there's an interview on the news at one.
Yeah, I know, but Brian wouldn't have minded a competition, and probably now would have been keen that there was one. But that being said, look at, he was more than popular. You know, we started into a new era, and at the time in that, the financial situation just took a nosedive very, very quickly.
Before we come on to that, just Brian Cowan's coming to power. Did he give Bertie a little bit of a nudge? Because there was some very difficult evidence being heard at the tribunal, the planning tribunal, and I think it was widely reported at the time that Brian Cowan paid a visit to Bertie Ahern on his way back from the airport. So what's your sense of that?
Well, my sense of that is that Bertie was aware at the time that there were going to be huge difficulties, and you know, it takes people to point those out if you're there, and if you're friendly with someone, it's equally your duty to tell someone that, you know, there are difficulties ahead, and in the better interest of a person or a party or whatever, certain decisions need to be made.
Did Brian Cowan do that?
I can't say that because I don't know and I never asked him. But I do know that, you know, it was coming to a time, and I remember I was doing your show, actually.
The Week in Politics.
The Week in Politics on the Sunday. You know, I knew at the time that it was going to be huge, that there were difficulties there. And it wasn't just me, it was coming from others. And look, Bertie Ahern gave a lot to Irish politics, and it was creating a difficulty for him. And, you know, the man made up his own mind at the end of the day.
But I think significantly, if memory serves me, I think three times you did say on that programme, look, it's a matter for the tribunal to decide about his evidence.
And it was.
And you didn't want to get into it.
No, and I didn't. And I don't want to do it now.
Fine.
Either.
So you ended up as Taoiseach, and with, as you say, this tsunami coming at you. Mm. Were you in the room the night of the famous guarantee banks?
No.
Where were you at that stage when that was being done?
Well, I'm trying to remember that day. I actually was in the Department of Finance for some reason early in the morning, doing whatever I had to do. I was in the office until very, very late. I went for a bite to eat about 10 o'clock at night and went back to the office at about 11:30, 12 o'clock. And early in the morning then I got a call just on my way back to the apartment from Brian Lenehan telling me what was going on. I had heard actually from a taxi driver in town that something must have been going on in the Dáil because the lights were on late. Now, isn't that funny when you hear those kind of things? But I spoke to Brian at the time. I said, do you want me to go back in? He said, no, wait till later on. So I waited until about 4:30 or 5 o'clock and went back in then.
Did you have any sense, and looking back now, that you were that particular government and that fateful decision to guarantee 100% of all bank deposits was going to be as fateful as it was?
Well, at the time, and we had a cabinet meeting early in the morning, at the time we were left with no decision or a decision, and we had to make a decision, and a decision that would have inevitably meant if we didn't make that decision, we would have had a more serious situation there and then. And, you know, now it's easier to speak about these things because things progressed over the years, and not just in Ireland, but all over the European Union. And we're still talking about these issues. So it's been a long-term impact, the recession on Europe and on the world. You know, are banks too big to fail? That was a consideration. We had Northern Rock, what was going to happen as a consequence of that. Our big concern was what was going to happen to the people of Ireland as a consequence of getting up in the morning and there was going to be no money in the ATM machines. And, you know, look at what happened in Cyprus. People lost a huge amount of money. So, you know, a decision was made. And as you know, there were inquiries made subsequently, which indicated that at the time there was very little choice for the government, but to make such a decision?
Well, that's disputed, I suppose. And what maybe you were misled about, if not lied to, was the state and the health or the state of the banks.
Well, they certainly weren't informed.
And it's very blame for that?
Well, I didn't want to spend the whole day here now speaking about something that will be discussed, hopefully in the future. But, you know, once you have full information, you can make a full decision. But a decision was made on the basis of the information that was made available to the government.
If you had known the problem was one of solvency as well as liquidity, do you think Anglo would have been let go?
I'm not going to answer that. I think that would be most imprudent, given that, you know, there's going to be a few more court cases and there's going to be a banking inquiry. So let's await the outcome.
Do you think
of those.
You'll have much to tell that inquiry yourself?
I shouldn't think so. If I'm asked to be there, I'll be there. But as you know, Brian Cowan has indicated years ago that he's more than happy to cooperate as well.
There were the two Brians. You worked with them, obviously, at close quarters. You were Taoiseach there. On the inside, how was that relationship?
It was very good.
Really?
Yeah, well, I got on the best with them. Now, Brian,
I'm not talking about your relationship with them, but you got on well with them both. What about the relationship with each other?
Well, like any Minister of Finance, and the Taoiseach was a Minister of Finance, and so was the man before that. Most people never liked the Minister of Finance because they always said no. That was always the way. Every minister spent most of their time trying to put their point across, trying to make sure that they get their budgets right, et cetera, et cetera. So since time immemorial, you've always had a situation where there was always not necessarily a difficult, but a challenging relationship between any minister and the Minister for Finance. And then, of course, the Taoiseach would have been asked, perhaps by backbenchers or others, you know, to intervene if something needed to be done, that this had to be done for all sorts of reasons. So I have to say that as a working relationship, they had a very good working relationship. And I listened to Eamon Ryan in one of the programmes there recently, where he spoke about his work on the cabinet. And we had a very, very good working relationship, all of us. And, you know, we knew each other very, very well because we met ad infinitum, morning, noon and night for 2 or 3 years.
And what about then, one big crisis we've spoken about, the night of the bank guarantee, and then of course there was the bailout that came Ireland entering the programme with the IMF and the EU and so forth. And that was something that was denied and denied right up to the end, with people, even including ministers, fairly senior people like Noel Dempsey and Dermot Ahern, being allowed to go out and address the media and say, no, this isn't happening, and on the basis of what they were told. Now, again, was there any choice to doing it like that?
Well, look, there was a lot of pressure being put on Ireland to deal with the issues that we had to deal with. And we're a small, open economy with a huge burden of debt. The ECB also will have to be inquired into as to their role in the context of the banking bailout. So at a time when people, by right, shouldn't be discussing certain business in public. There's a few sieves in the world. One of them is in Europe. And it was quite obvious that there was talk and chat going on in the European Union level or at European level, which not necessarily was going to be discussed outside of the context of the cabinet. So I thought it was very embarrassing for my two colleagues, the two ministers, because they weren't aware at the time that there were certain other things going on in institutions that were outside of our remit and outside of our discussions. But it was, as you know, from a number of people, particularly the ECB, had expressed grave concerns about what had to be done.
And then we found out from Patrick Honohan on Morning Ireland, I think in the middle of that week, look, this is going to happen. I've heard it suggested that one of the reasons the politicians, people like the Taoiseach and the then minister, held out for so long was that they, before they were prepared to enter into any discussions, they wanted an assurance that Ireland's corporate tax rate of 12.5% would be off the table in whatever arrangements.
Well, it's
made.
Like anything. If you're going in to do a deal, the last thing you do is show your hand. And we have to hold out as best we could for the best interests of the state. And whatever those issues were, you had to hold out for them as best you can. And, you know, we're still talking about corporation tax. The United States is still expressing concerns. There's investigations about all of these issues. So there's always a few things that we had to make sure wouldn't be part of any deal. And we couldn't be doing that out on the public airwaves. And, you know, it's in any but conversation or discussion you're having with anybody, you have to have a situation whereby you know your own bottom line. You have to hold out for that.
Would the exclusion of two such senior and experienced ministers from that knowledge and letting them out and being embarrassed in the way that they were subsequently, do you think that contributed to their decision not to stand in the election? The election then?
God, I don't know. I'd prefer if you'd ask the two gentlemen themselves. But, you know, we were. It was a very difficult time. And I must say the other thing that I've noticed is a huge change from sitting back now from politics. If I was out in public at a function and Brian Lenihan was out in somewhere else in Dublin an hour later and the Taoiseach was out an hour later, there was a herd going round after everybody, running literally from one person to the other to ask the same question to see would there be a different answer. This type of thing was going on. And anybody that appeared anywhere was being asked of all sorts of questions and trying to create a situation whereby we weren't at them on what was going on. So there's a lot of pressures like that on people. And, you know, even a slip or anything like that was all taken and blown completely out of proportion.
Was there a sense of... Well, obviously, there must
doesn't
have been a
doesn't seem
sense
to
of,
happen now, the of, herd
well,
mentality.
I suppose times are different. Mm. You know, we don't have the IMF sort of heading into Dublin Airport at the present time. But was there a sense of panic in the government at that stage?
No, there wasn't a panic because we took our time. And if it took all night to sit up all night to discuss things at Cabinet, that's what happened. Took a break, people weren't happy. Take a couple hours, come back, and that's the way it was.
Was Brian Lenihan indecisive and it took the Taoiseach to make the call on some of those big things?
No, the government made a decision, end of story. And
except the government met incorporeally, to use that awful expression.
Yes, and that still stands.
It still happens, I think.
It still happens. It's a facility that is necessary in the event of it having to happen. But the government made a decision, and I don't speak out of turn about anything that happened in Cabinet.
And what about your role then as Taoiseach? Because those duties included or entailed going into the Dáil, I think, on a Thursday, doing the order of business, taking mm-hmm. questions. Did you find that a particularly rough experience? Because there were, I think, commentators and the opposition parties at the time, they went in quite hard on you.
They did. I suppose if I was on the other side, I'd probably do the same. maybe not as dirty, but anyway. Kept you on your toes. It took a little bit of time to to get the experience.
What was dirty about it?
Well, there was a few sharp comments made by certain people who, you know, I wouldn't have been too particularly enamoured with. But look, politics is politics at the end of the day. And if you're not tough and you haven't got a hard skin, you can't keep going in it.
Did you feel out of your depth at any stage?
A lot of people thought that. But, you know, I worked hard. I prepared myself for anything that came forward. And the thing about being either a Taoiseach or a Taoiseach or somebody taking those questions on a Thursday is 99.9% of it had nothing to do about your own department. So you had to be familiar with issues that would be, you know, something that would be that would come up at a time when it was either popular or something might have happened the night before. So you just had to be on your toes. So it was, it was 4:30 in the morning on a Thursday morning to eat the papers and see what was going on.
It all ended chaotically, I think it's true to say. There was the reshuffle that wasn't. There was Fianna Fáil going into election with the Taoiseach, who is in office but no longer the leader of the party. And a general sense of there was impending doom for your party. Was part of that because maybe, like, Brian Cowan, he went into the Dáil, he tried to reshuffle a cabinet after the Greens had left, and the thing just all went crazy, really.
Yeah, it was.
Ministers were not appointed.
Well, I suppose if you go back a little bit further, we had a by-election here in the winter. And the Greens pulled out. I'll never forget it. We were here on a Thursday, canvassing myself and Tony Killeen, and we got a call to be back up in Dublin that the Greens were pulling out. And there was a view at that time that we should have all gone and that would have been the right time. And the people of Donegal were hoping that would be the way because they were in the middle of a by-election and all this was going on. But the view was at the time that despite the outcome, which we knew would be inevitable, we had to make a decision on behalf of the people and the sovereign state. And on a principle, we proceeded to go ahead. It was a difficult time because I think the view was by Brian at the time that people who were not going forward should not be ministers and that others should be there. Now, it didn't work out the way it should have worked out in his view, But, you know, we paid an ultimate price for what had happened.
Bearing in mind all you've been through, elected to the Dáil when you were still 21 years of age and all the tumult you endured, and you're still not 50 years of age, if I've done my sums correctly.
Right.
Would you go back to it?
I'm not sure. I'll see. It's not a matter for me at the end of the day. I'm a big believer in whatever the party decides. Things have changed in this constituency anyway, Sean, because we're now a five-seater. But from Lahey, Ballyshannon, Bundoran is now in a new constituency, which have been a great base for me. You know, that may decide. Geography is also very much part of politics, as you know. We also have a senator sitting here, and we have a great colleague in Inishowen, a TD. So it'll be a matter for the party to decide locally what they want to do, who are they going to run, how many are they going to run, and what's going to happen.
Part of that decision might be based on your availability, or otherwise your availability to serve, as the phrase.
Well, that's the other part of it. And, you know, that I still enjoy politics. I'm still involved in politics. We were very disappointed that we lost a seat in our electoral area at local level this year, and we seem to have bucked the trend the other way around. We did very well outside of Donegal, and then we lost a seat in my electoral area. So, you know, Fianna Fáil has to regroup. We have a lot of work to do here in this constituency in order to get back to what was more than like our heyday.
What's your sense, though, as you meet ordinary people? I presume the opprobrium that you would have come across or encountered, even in your own area, 3 or 4 years ago, has subsided. But do you get a sense that you, if you were to go forward, that you would get re-elected?
I'd have a lot of people who would like me to go back. A lot. A lot of people in my party, and more so outside of the party, people in the local area would like to see me back in politics. But, you know, look what happened in 3 years. If David hadn't passed away, I might have been more gung-ho than I am. But look, it's still a while to go to the next general election, and anything can happen, as we all know. So we'll leave it in the hands of the people that will make the decision at the end of the day.
How do you think the party is doing since that last election? Generally now, not just in Donegal.
Generally, I think we're starting to come back. I think the emphasis on the local elections was hugely important. That's your base. We need to do a bit more, I have to say, on the reorganisation of the party in each of the electoral areas. I was listening to our leader, who was saying that he would like to have conventions fairly soon. And we also need to get a new policy framework out there as quickly as possible.
How do you think Micheál Martin is doing as party leader?
He's doing quite well, considering he's a very difficult job. It's very easy to be populist. But at the end of the day, if you're a leader of a party, you have to have more behind you than populism. You need to have the people on the ground. You need to have the policies. I think he's been very cool and, you know, performing quite well.
And to those who would say the last thing Fianna Fáil needs to do, if it wants to get back into a position where it can contribute to the formation or even lead a government, is to see the old faces that got us into the bailout, that led the country to rack and ruin, people like Micheál Martin, yourself, O'Queeve and others, even though you might have all had different reservations at different times, is to see new faces still around.
Well, I hope there's going to be a lot of new faces. And we have a lot of new people that have been elected. I feel we have a lot of good people that are going to be candidates. I'd like to see a lot more women in politics, in my own party and in all of the parties. I think that would add to our political debate in this country. So, look, when I was 21, I was very young in the context of going forward. I mightn't say that somebody at 21 years of age should be going forward for politics, but younger people, men and women, need to get out there, and we'll certainly be aiming for that in the party as well. Whether people would say you should or you shouldn't be in politics, at the end of the day, Sean, it'll be a matter for the people of Donegal who their representatives are going to be. And if people dislike that, well, then that is democracy, and that's the way it works.
To borrow a phrase from sport, I get a sense you're hungry for the ball.
We're more hungry now to be taken on the Dubs.
We'll have a conversation. We'll have a conversation about that in some detail with Jimmy McGuinness later in the programme. Mary Coughlan, thank you very much indeed.
Thank
for
you very much. And we're glad to see you, Sean.
Well, you do that very often as well. Thank you. Back with some poetry and further conversation after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.